Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
To the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 611. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, it is February. Love is in the air. And what do we love? Well, a couple of things. We love really good movies, and we love Richard Knight Jr. because he is the guru, the uber queer of all things cinema. And I'm so thrilled because it means it's that time of year again when Richard is on the show for his annual Oscar prediction podcast. Hey, Richard, how are you?
I'm delighted to be called the uber queer of movies. I want that bronze somewhere.
I made you some business cards. I was trying it out here to make sure you'd like it, so I could. That was my pitch. I think it's good.
I adore it. The uber queer. I'm going to say this to everybody. Hey, don't you know who I am? I am the uber queer of movies, according to Amy Matheny.
That's right. You can put that in your column. You can put that in your column and smoke it.
Right.
This year, this past, I guess we're kind of talking 2014, even though the Oscars happened in 2015. 2014, a good year for movies? What's your overall thoughts just in general about this year? What were the trends? It doesn't even have to encompass films that got nominated, but just looking back on the year in film for you, which I know you always do at the end of the year.
Well, I always look at stuff from a queer perspective, and
yep.
I still don't quite understand. I'm a member of an organization of gay lesbian journalists, and why don't more queer journalists do their top 10 queer movies of the year? I know that sometimes people get a little freaked out about that label because they think it's too confining, but I don't. So from a queer standpoint, we had a lot of interesting stuff and some amazing stuff that broke through the mainstream. Things like Love is Strange, my favorite LGBT movie of last year.
Which I still have not seen, and Mitchell Fain even said last week, he was like, why it's not nominated for tons of Oscars, including Best Actors for both gentlemen, he doesn't understand.
I am totally with Mitchell on this one. I don't quite understand that either.
This is this is John Lithgow and Alfred Molina, older gay male couple who's been together for decades, right?
30-some years, and they finally get married in New York. Mm-hmm. And that lovely celebration leads to financial difficulties, and they're forced to live apart, and a lot of terrible things not so great things happen. And
yep.
It's a really beautiful, bittersweet look at life, and it's also just warm and loving and a real leap forward for Iris Sachs, who co-wrote the picture with his writing partner and the director. He's an openly gay director who's made so many good films, and this is one of his best. So I think that is a shame that it has not gotten more love. So I love that movie.
I've got to see it. I hope it comes out to where I can see it soon. I don't know what it'll come on, but hopefully it will come on.
I believe it's out now, actually.
Is it?
I believe it's out, and you can get it. And
Netflix. Okay.
So love that. I liked a lot of, I think one of the biggest surprises this year is this film that's, this Dark Horse movie, Boyhood, which writer-director Richard Linklater made over 12 years with this amazing cast. And, this is a picture that sort of, I want to say it was available on demand, and it wasn't in a ton of theaters, and then critics started loving it, and the audiences started finding it. Yep. A lot of the IFC movies, like The Babadook, this one of the scariest movies of the year by this writer, female writer-director, Jennifer Kent from Australia, was available on demand, wasn't even in theaters. Snowpiercer from...
which I also missed, and I actually told Scott Duff and some other people to go see it because I was going to go see it, and then they went and saw it, and life got away from me, and I missed it. So that's another one I really need to see.
Well, that's also on DVD. So it seems like people don't really... of course, it's me just kind of, guessing at stuff, but... if you want to see a movie, I don't care. I'll go to a theater. I'll watch it on my phone. I'll watch it on TV. I'll watch it, so I think maybe the barriers are starting to break down. Mm. I know theater owners are probably not too happy about that. And I think the IMAX thing and the 3D thing, which I'm so happy to see the 3D thing start to wane because I hate 3D. Did I say that? Can I say it again? I hate 3D. It's so gimmicky and doesn't really add anything.
It added something to Gravity. Seeing Gravity in IMAX 3D was pretty surreal for me, but 9.5 times out of 10, I don't need to see it in 3D.
Yeah. I fully feel like it just, it darkens the picture. I just have a lot of problems with it. I know there are people that love it. And, I agree with you. There are certain things that are still wonderful to see in the IMAX. I love seeing Gravity in the IMAX.
Yeah.
Interstellar looked terrific in the IMAX. I think, it was a three-hour movie that should have been, 2 hours. There was an extra hour of stuff that shouldn't have been in there. And, of course, we still have these critic-proof movies like, Transformer 27 and these comic book action things.
Yeah. It seems like those didn't wane, but at the same time, what I hear you saying are the cream did rise often this year. If maybe not to widespread acclaim, they're still kind of bubbling and percolating. I mean, I do think people are still hearing about Love is Strange. I think with the Golden Globe nomination, people heard about Pride if they hadn't seen Pride, which I watched, video on demand and loved. My girlfriend and I watched it just, last month or whatever. When it was, you could buy it on video on demand and just loved it. I thought it was such a great film and to get the Golden Globe nomination was huge.
It was really nice to see a feel good movie with a message like that breakthrough.
Yeah.
It was great to see the Grand Budapest Hotel, stay.
Which has to be the queerest movie of the year, right? I mean, Wes Anderson just makes the queerest movies always. And I love them so much.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to be a lobby boy?
But seriously, all his movies just are so queertastic. And you know what I mean by that. If you haven't...
I certainly do.
The listeners, hopefully. It doesn't mean that there possibly has to be anything homosexual. It's just queer. I mean, it's just... He just has such a...
I can start to find any kind of, gay stuff. Whiplash, the one about the drummer, drum teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about, Aquarius and M relationship.
Yeah. We can make them all fit. I mean, and it's interesting, too, when we look at, just to stay on this topic of, the LGBT aspect of of this past year and of the movies. You know, it's not the year that we really have, you know, any film nominated that really seems to deal with us in a big way, except for The Imitation Game. I mean, and even then, it's not, I have not seen this film yet, so you'd have to tell exactly.
Well, it's getting flack because the third act is sort of truncated. And the third act, the end of Alan Turing's life, is really when he, you know, was made to you know, pay this terrible price for being gay. And so, you know, and I think on some levels it's justified that people are very upset that this gay hero of ours, you know, this aspect has sort of been, you know, sort of edited out. But it really hasn't been. When you look at this story, which has been told many times already in, mm-hmm. I don't know, three or four movies, mm-hmm. a stage play, almost every one of these stories has either cut out the fact that he's gay or they really, really de-emphasize it. I mean, it's very clear that he's gay, and I didn't have a problem with it, you know.
Okay. So, I have not seen said film yet, but I am trying to see it before Oscar night. So, because I really, really want to see, you know, A, because every gay man I know loves and straight woman loves Benedict Cumberbatch. So,
well, I also think it's interesting that Harvey Weinstein, or how do you say it?
Weinstein, yeah.
You know, Weinstein, who is, you know, the
Weinstein,
the Oscar winner of Oscar campaigning. Has, I mean, in a way, they have sort of downplayed a little bit the gay stuff in the advertising, the marketing, whatever, which I understand from a marketing standpoint. Gay at the movies does not mean money yet. Mm-hmm. And now that some other movies like Birdman and Boyhood are starting to steal the thunder, now we're starting to pull out the gay card.
How funny is that? Yeah, because the whole next month is going to be the campaign, right? The hard, because...
he's starting that hard sell. He is saying that he will give back his whatever honor the Queen gave him if they would only give Alan Turing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This worked for the King's Speech. It worked for other films, and I would not discount that film.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, I mean, it is a film that has a lot of nominations. It's had a lot of attention, and is definitely, you know, representing an enormous part of gay history, not to mention World War II history, not to mention, you know, British history. I mean, there's just so many people who want to claim him, right? And...
well, I think it also, I mean, I think also a reason why it's gotten so many nominations is because it really hits the sweet spot of the Oscar voters.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm 57 years old and, you know, I tend to like these kind of big historical, you know, pictures that, and I think a lot of these older sort of voters do too.
Yeah.
So, it's the most mainstream, I think, of all the movies, other than Selma and Theory of Everything, which kind of look at historical periods.
Right. Before we head on to the Best Picture category, I just want to give a little shout out that, you know, the Lesbtastic, Lesbian Twintastic, Tegan and Sarah, sing Everything is Awesome, one of the songs that's up for Best Original Song from the Lego Movie. So that's kind of cool.
That's very cool.
Having
that's
some queer cool. ladies. I don't know if they're singing at the Oscars, but hopefully they will be. And the Oscar night will be fairly gay because we have the wonderful and fabulous and uber gay himself, Neil Patrick Harris, hosting this year. And that always, you know, proves to be a lot of fun when Neil Patrick Harris is in the house. And a lot of really great, notable people nominated this year, so it should be a fun night. Before Richard and I start going through all of the films and some of the categories this year, I'm going to take a really quick break and tell you what's going on in the news this week, and also what's going on in arts and culture, especially the stages and the theaters around Chicago. And then we'll be back, Richard Knight Jr. on the show with us. We're looking to the Oscars, and we're both making our predictions. We'll see who's right after this.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. Following news, the U.S. Supreme Court would consider the issue of marriage rights for same-sex couples. A federal judge has halted lawsuits seeking the legalization of gay nuptials in North Dakota until the High Court renders further guidance. Chief Judge Ralph Erickson, an appointee of George W. Bush, indicated he's placed a stay on the two cases pending a decision by the United States Supreme Court in four consolidated cases.
President Obama, in his sixth State of the Union address, said that the U.S. residents now value the dignity and worth of gay citizens and for the first time recognize lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people in a State of the Union address. I've seen something like gay marriage go from a wedge issue used to drive us apart to a story of freedom across our country, a civil right now legal in states that 7 in 10 of Americans call home, said Obama, noting the rise in support for marriage equality.
The federal judge who struck down Alabama's constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage put her ruling on hold January 25th, giving state officials 2 weeks to appeal her decision to a higher court. U.S. District Judge Kelly V.S. Granad granted an emergency request from Alabama Attorney General Luther Strange, putting a stay on her ruling February 9th, a hold which could be extended if the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals decides such a stay is warranted.
Pennsylvania Governor-elect Tom Wolf, the Democrat, announced that Dr. Rachel Levine is his choice for Physician General of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Levine would be the highest-ranked transgender woman in Pennsylvania state government history. She is currently the chief of the Division of Adolescent Medicine and Eating Disorders at Penn State's Milton S. Hershey Medical Center, where she also serves as a professor of pediatrics and psychiatry.
Oklahoma State Rep. Sally Kern, known for her consistent stance against same-sex marriage, introduced 3 bills causing controversy among equality groups. House Bill 1599 is being called the Preservation and Sovereignty of Marriage Act, and it says taxpayer dollars or governmental salaries cannot be used for the licensing or support of same-sex marriage. She also filed House Bill 1598, the Freedom to Obtain Conversion Therapy Act, and House Bill 1597, which would allow any business in the state to refuse service to any LGBT person or group.
A study by Kink University has named Portland, Oregon, the kinkiest city in the U.S. The study evaluated the BDSM, fetish, and polyamorous factors of the 50 largest cities in the U.S. using 4 factors. The total size of the kink-identified population, the size of the population relative to the city size, the number of resources available for kink-identified people, and the adult entertainment purchases in each city. Some of the other cities in the top 10 are Vegas, number 10, L.A., 6, Chicago, number 4, and San Francisco, number 2.
In world news, a notebook said to contain detailed mathematics and computer science notes written by Alan Turing, the late gay British cryptographer, is going up for auction in April. The notebook, dated to 1942, has never been seen in public, but is expected to demand as much as $1.5 million when it goes on sale at Bonhams Auction House in New York on April 13th.
King Felipe VI has become the first Spanish head of state to appear on the cover of a gay magazine. The monarch is featured in a special edition of the bilingual Rock Up magazine. Felipe became king when his father abdicated last June, and during his first week in office, he became the first Spanish head of state to meet with LGBT groups.
The Islamic State, or ISIS, has released images purportedly showing a gay man being pushed from a roof in Mosul, Iraq. The terrorist organization uploaded the photographs to justpaste.it, a file-sharing service. Homosexuality is regularly publicly punished in ISIS-controlled territories. 2 men were stoned to death in Raqqa, Syria, in November.
A transgender man and his fiancée reportedly had a private meeting with Pope Francis. The man, Diego Niera Laharaja, wrote a letter about being rejected by his parish in Spain and being called the devil's daughter by a priest. A translation of text in the Spanish publication Hoy indicated that Laharaja said the Pope embraced him and that he now feels at peace.
The former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia has moved to ban same-sex marriage, as well as making it extremely difficult for any future legislation to allow same-sex civil unions to pass. The Parliament of Macedonia voted 72-4 yesterday to define marriage as specifically between one man and one woman. Also, an amendment reads that legal relations in marriage, family, and civil unions are to be regulated by a law adopted by a two-thirds majority of the total members of Parliament.
Chilean legislators overwhelmingly voted in favor of a bill that would legalize same-sex civil unions. 86 legislators in the Chamber of Deputies voted for the bill, while 23 voted against it and 2 abstained. The bill will now head to the Senate for a final vote.
In entertainment news, out singer-songwriter Matt Zarley will release his newest album, Hopeful Romantic, on February 10th. Zarley's first album, Debut, was released in 2002. He was named the first openly gay bachelor in People Magazine's Hottest Bachelors issue that same year.
Openly gay Major League Soccer player Robbie Rogers has criticized FIFA's decision to hold the next two World Cups in nations where its LGBT citizens have few rights. FIFA awarded the 2018 World Cup to Russia, while the 2022 soccer tournament will be held in Qatar.
Out singer, actor, writer, director, and composer Billy Porter gets his own one-man edition of Live from Lincoln Center on PBS on April 3rd. Cyndi Lauper will make an appearance. Porter won the Best Actor Tony Award in 2013 for Kinky Boots.
ABC has ordered a comedy from gay activist Dan Savage, loosely based on the life of boundary-pushing columnist Savage. The untitled comedy pilot follows a picture-perfect family that is turned upside down when the youngest son comes out of the closet.
New Kids on the Block's Jonathan Knight and his boyfriend are taking their relationship around the world as they join the cast of CBS's The Amazing Race for season 26. The new season will be the first ever all-dating couples season, with 5 of the teams actually going on blind dates.
Ellen DeGeneres is producing a new sitcom slated to premiere March 17th, titled One Big Happy. The show will star Alicia Cuthbert, Nick Zano, and Kelly Brook. The story involves a straight man, Zano, and a gay woman, Cuthbert, who decide to have a baby together. However, after Cuthbert's character becomes pregnant, another woman enters the picture when Zano finds a serious girlfriend played by Brook.
Tom Petty has been given a songwriting credit for Sam Smith's hit song, Stay With Me. Petty and collaborator Jeff Lynne were added to the song's credits after Petty's team noticed a likeness between Smith's song and Petty's I Won't Back Down. Smith's song is nominated for Song of the Year at the February 8th Grammy Awards.
Broadway star Kyle Dean Massey will play an openly gay singer-songwriter on ABC's Nashville in a recurring role. Massey, 33, is himself openly gay with Broadway credits including Wicked, Pippin, and Next to Normal.
And Nick Jonas will have a recurring role on the Fox series Scream Queens from Glee and American Horror Story creators. The comedy is set on a college campus that's rocked by a series of murders. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Why can't you just believe in me? Not everyone is the enemy.
Hey everybody, this is Shelley Wright, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast with my good friend Amy.
Doing the best I can, but I'm broken.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 2nd, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. A Red Orchid Theater toasts the start of 2015 with the smash hit Accidentally Like a Martyr by Grant James Vargas. directed by Shay Murray, the flawless ensemble acting is highly recommended by the Sun-Times, and the Tribune says, Accidentally Like a Martyr is a warm and potent show, well worth 80 minutes of your time. Now playing through March 1st with tickets and more at aredorchidtheater.org.
The Broadway smash hit and classic musical comedy La Cage aux Folles is now at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire through March 29th. Feathers get ruffled, households upended in a poignant tale of one family's struggle to stay together, stay fabulous, and above all else, stay true to themselves. Visit MarriottTheater.com for tickets and more.
The Book of Mormon is the first great comedy of 2015. Join Pride Films and Plays and see what happens when two Mormons ring the doorbell of one Ethel Merman. Order tickets for the Jeff-nominated Book of Mormon at brownpapertickets.com through February 15th only.
Award-winning Porchlight Music Theater presents the Chicago premiere of the hit Broadway revue Sondheim on Sondheim, February 6th through March 15th at Stage 773. Do not miss the all-star cast performing songs from 19 Sondheim shows with video of the composer himself. For tickets and information, visit porchlightmusictheater.org.
Steppenwolf Theater presents Marie Antoinette, a modern take on the young Queen of France called an unconventional, bitingly comic play, a jagged yet elegant historical riff by Time Out New York. Tickets on sale now. Get your seats at steppenwolf.org. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream. Everything is better when we stick together. Side by side, you and I gonna win forever. Let's party forever. We're the same, I'm like you, you're like me. We're all working in harmony.
All right, Richard Knight Jr., the movie Queen, the critic for Windy City Times on all things film and cinema, is here on the Windy City Queercast with me this week. And we're throwing it down. We're going to keep it real. We're going to talk about some of these Oscar categories. And let's start with the big one, because we've kind of talked through some of them in the first part of the show. We were talking about where's the LGBT this year. We talked about some of the pictures. Looking at the list here, we've got how many? 9 films?
We've got American Sniper, mm-hmm. Birdman, Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel, Imitation Game, Selma, Theory of Everything, and Whiplash.
Okay, I've only seen half of these movies so far. Have you seen them all?
The one I have not seen is Selma.
Okay, I've seen that one.
Okay,
so
good. You can talk about it. Now, being in a couple of different critics' organizations,
yep.
I think the studio that marketed this picture made a huge misstep by not sending out screeners much earlier. We did not get screeners. It wasn't easy for voters. They didn't make it easy for voters to see the film.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, you know, people like to sit in their couch and pop in those little for your consideration screeners.
Yep.
And I think it hurt the film. It's really, really shocking to me that this director, a female African-American director, was not given a nomination.
I have to say Ava DuVernay and one of our former Windy City Queercast co-hosts, Coleman Domingo, is in and plays the Reverend Abernathy and kind of Martin Luther King, portrayed brilliantly by David Oyelowo, plays basically like his spiritual brother, you know, like he's very much a constant in the film and is featured a lot in the trailers. So we got one of our own openly gay, amazing man who's in this film. But I was just shocked and stunned, I have to say, because I think it is just an extraordinary movie. I think it is. I went in kind of expecting one thing, which, I don't know why. Coleman has been very lucky in that he's been in Lincoln. He's been in The Butler. And then he was in this. And, so I kind of thought like, it's just going to get bigger and more epic. And, I don't know why, but it just felt like I kind of had an expectation that it was going to build on The Butler even more and make it more specific and more intense. And what I found surprising about this film is that it was very intimate and very personal. And it doesn't feel like it. I don't even know. I really want you to see it.
I'm dying to see it.
Yeah, it has a real intimacy about it and a real humanity in this film that, I don't know, I guess I just thought part of it was going to feel a little melodramatic because it's about Selma and it's Martin Luther King. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it really isn't. It wasn't to me. And I really loved it so deeply, and I was just so saddened that David Oyelowo wasn't nominated and that she wasn't nominated because she had the opportunity to be the first African-American woman ever nominated.
Well, it's been an extraordinary year for actors, and I'm glad to hear you say that. People that I kind of trust have said the same thing. Unlike The Butler, there doesn't seem to have been a lot of stunt casting in this. It's like they just got great. I know Oprah's in the picture. But
she
there are
is.
A lot of people you don't know, and that was my problem with – one of my problems with The Butler is that you're constantly thrown out of the movie because it's like, oh, it's Jane Fonda as Nancy Reagan.
Right.
You have to kind of – and I know we've talked about this before that this they always have stars who play these five-line roles in that, which I don't quite get.
Right. Oprah is so good in it, but, it's a very small part that she has. It's very pivotal. I won't say it's it's very pivotal, and it's early on. It is really filled with people. I feel in the same way now that we go, Daniel Day-Lewis, is he not Lincoln? Like, it's kind of like, now we're
I don't understand. Again, I'm sorry because I haven't seen the film, but it was a given that Daniel Day-Lewis was going to win that Oscar. It was a given that that movie was going to be, I can't remember if it won the best picture, but it was pretty, it was like way up there. And this, when it arrived, seemed to have that same momentum, and it, immediately disappeared.
Well, it had lots of controversy, and people are going to say whether this was racism or sexism or whether they didn't mail out screeners or whatever it was. But, just very interesting that a movie like American Sniper that's not even gotten to the movie theaters, got so much acclaim and so many nominations when a movie like Selma, which came out a few weeks before, I've read a really interesting article in Forbes and I've mentioned it on the Queercast already, but, that said, we are not comfortable, there is a perception that many of the people in the Academy, which would be older white people, they may be perfectly fine seeing stories of African Americans as slaves or oppressed, or we think of those, the movies that have gotten accolades or even television miniseries like Roots or whatever. But this is very much a powerful, empowering movie of triumph. It is a movie of about an oppression that was then triumphant, that the people came together. And it wasn't just African-American people, but...
we can say this also about any gay movie with a happy ending.
That's right. That's right. This is exactly the same. But that's why
they
I say
love
as
when we
LGBT
die.
People, as LGBT people, I feel really fervently... that it's good to, we need to voice whatever happened here. Now, I didn't know the thing about the screeners. I did hear that in the past week. But before we go on and on about Selma, I mean, whether it could win picture after only having one other nomination, I doubt it. But tell me about your favorites of this category, what you think will win or should win.
Well, my hands down favorite, again, I've not seen some. I've seen all the other films in this category would be Boyhood.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect to have this kind of passion for it. I know there are people are like, what's the big deal? It's this normal, you know, American family for 3 hours. And you see this young guy go from the age of 6 to 18 over a 12-year period.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those movies you can't really describe the magic of it, because it's like you set up these expectations that you'll never meet. You just, you know, I didn't really know much about it other than people started to say, you really need to see this film.
Yeah.
And so, and I missed it when it was, you know, they did the theatrical and stuff. So when they started sending these out, I was like, okay, I better check this out.
Yep.
And I can tell you that I was riveted. It could have been a 5-hour movie.
Oh yeah. Wow. Yeah. I think, it is really becoming the movie to beat. Is there something that you think is a contender with it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now that you've seen Birdman take the Screen Actors Guild Award, and that's a completely different kind of animal, because you have this very consciously theatrical piece from the acting standpoint, and you're always aware that it's a movie because it's all done in a single take, and that camera is always, you know, bobbing and weaving.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was very funny. My girlfriend, who is just a lay person, you know, she's not, you know, a theater type or a film, you know, buff or whatever. And literally, we were like an hour into it, and she leans over to me and she goes, I'm out. I'm so out. I cannot watch this. Like, she hated it. Like, hated it. Was like, I'm out. And it's a polarizing movie. You know, I did not hate it. I mean, honestly, I was laughing a lot of the time, even if it was just only in my mind or under my breath, of like, oh yeah, you know, this is who we are, people who create.
Well, to me, it seemed, and I'm really surprised that it's gotten this wide mainstream acclaim, because it feels to me very much like an insider, a business kind of movie.
Yes.
Although it does tap into that kind of innate narcissism that I love.
That's right.
I think is just rampant in our culture. I certainly understand. As I was watching, I thought there are people who are going to walk out of this and hate it, because it's very gimmicky. At the same time, you either embrace it or you don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Grand Budapest Hotel. It's kind of like the best Wes Anderson movie I think I've seen. But it's very hard for a comedy to win the Oscar. I don't think American Sniper belongs in the category. I'm not a fan of Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Usually.
That would have been nice if Love is Strange had gotten that spot.
Oh, that would have been tremendous.
Yeah.
I would be sort of fine if The Imitation Game wins.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. I was not a huge fan of The Theory of Everything. I think because, for me, it's told more from her perspective, the wife's perspective,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, I don't know. And Whiplash, to me, is like a two-character thing. It's not necessarily a best picture. It was, you know, great performance.
Man, it was a great movie, though. I have to say, that movie has
stuck with me. I mean, you're kind of riveted.
Yep.
I mean, I would like to have seen, the New York picture. The one that Jessica Chastain is in.
Violence? The Violent Year?
The Most Violent. I mean, that J.C. Chandor, that's his third movie, and he's 3 for 3.
Mm.
I'm telling you, Margin Call, Oz Lost, and now this third movie, which really was a very specific time period in New York. And, again, I don't think a lot of people... I don't even know if the movie's been released yet.
Yeah. I don't know if it has either, because I haven't seen it. So, really
good film.
Talk to me. So you're picking Boyhood, and you think Boyhood should and will win. I will probably agree with you on that one. I feel like Selma could have given it a run for the money if it had had other accolades behind it, personally. But I think Boyhood is something fresh and is something that happens, you know, never. I mean, it's so rare, that movie.
Right. My second choice, or my second thought, is Imitation Game, because that's the kind of movie that Oscar, traditionally Oscar lovers, Oscar voters go for.
Yeah. Talk to me about the supporting category. Well, let's go to director, just because picture, you kind of have to talk about director, which, of course, it's interesting that there are eight films nominated, but there are only five directors. So we have the director for Birdman, Inarritu, Linklater for Boyhood, Bennett Miller for Foxcatcher, not mentioned as one of the best pictures, Wes Anderson for Budapest Hotel, and Morton Tilden for The Imitation Game. Is Linklater just sewing this up? I mean, is this like a lifetime of work that he will be honored for, do you think?
Well, it certainly it would be deserved. It's very rare for a picture to win and not the director. I think it's interesting that Bennett Miller, made it, got the nomination, because there's been a lot of controversy about Foxcatcher.
Yep.
I mean, recently, the guy who it's based on has come out and said he hates it because there's a suggestion. He's read some reviews that, there was a gay relationship between he and DuPont. And I'm sorry. I said this in my review. It could not be gayer. It's gay, gay, gay.
Right.
And I know they had to, I don't know, but it seems like they kind of had to tiptoe around this because, this guy's alive. But it's so clear that Channing Tatum, how come all of a sudden he's so mad at this DuPont? But anyway, I thought the movie was, much larger than just that one issue. It really kind of looked at the class and money in this country. And I really liked his films. And it was a really chilling, disturbing kind of movie. Mm. And Morton Tilden, he was here in Chicago. We talked with him. And it's his first English language film.
Wow.
Which is, pretty amazing for him to get the nomination, which is great. But I think you're right. I think it is kind of Linklater's year. And, certainly working on this movie for 12 years, Boyhood.
Yeah.
I'll be happy if he gets it.
A little bit every year for 10 years or whatever. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Well, along that same line, I mean, she's won the SAG. She's won the Golden Globe. She's won a number of other awards leading up to it. Supporting actress Patricia Arquette for Boyhood, up against Laura Dern for Wild, which I think was kind of a surprising nod, although she's lovely in it. Keiran Knightley for The Imitation Game, Emma Stone and Meryl Streep for Into the Woods. The interesting thing is this is such a phenomenal, I feel like this is actually a really strong category. I think Emma Stone is kind of a revelation in Birdman. I think we think of her in such a different way than what we're seeing her in this film. And I just thought Streep was the best thing in Into the Woods, for sure.
She's a lot of fun. She was definitely a lot of fun.
But, and everybody kind of supported her being the best, too. I just thought their ideas with that character for Into the Woods and was kind of delicious, honestly.
She's the one that really, just talking about Into the Woods for a second, is that, I saw the original Broadway production and
I did too. And right. I've done it. I did it when I was 21 years old. I played Cinderella.
Oh, how fun.
With a 30-piece orchestra. We were just Facebooking about that. Some of my friends that I did that with. I was a baby. I was the youngest person, one of the youngest people there that summer.
Well, the stage version, of course, is so over the top with the humor. And I know with the movie, you kind of have to walk that line where it's a little bit more realistic. But it's a fairy tale. And I missed so many of those laughs.
Yeah.
Joanna Gleason, Bernadette Peters, they got laughs out of, she would look. And Streep seemed to be the only one in the movie.
Yeah.
That was allowed to do that.
I felt like Anna Kendrick missed. I know that role the best, but I felt like she missed a lot. I really actually love Tracy Ullman's cameos and Jack. I love Jack and Jack's mother. I thought they kind of got a lot out of what they needed to mine. But I will tell you my whole theory on why it lost laughs is the tempo was too slow through the entire movie. not in a way that disturbed me, but I thought, wow, we should really crash into the end of Act One, pun intended, with the giant, for the happily ever after. We should crash. We've been going so fast. And because it's cinema, you know, they wanted to show some things and they were, I don't know, however they chose to film it, adding measures, whatever, even just the tempo of the actors.
So it was like a beat flow. I think it was just a little slow.
You're a musical person, yeah. I just felt like it didn't have the urgency and almost running down a hill that it needs to happen. It's happening so fast it should be happening so fast the first 45, 48 minutes of that film. And it just felt like we got way too much room to breathe.
I think you're right, because also in the movie, and I've never been aware of this, but in the movie, all of a sudden I was like, this is the thinnest story I've ever seen. There's like no plot. There's like, it's so thin and mm-hmm. the songs are so thick. They're so full.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Company, you know, when you look at, I'm sorry, I'm going off in the, you know, musical theater queen, but Company has that really deep score and the story is like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think honestly, if they had, you know, another film that's kind of nominated this year, it's not nominated in any of the major categories, but was one of my favorite movies of the year this year in just the real fun way, was Guardians of the Galaxy. And that film had tempo. That film understood how to lift, and have it coming at us so fast that it got the comedy right. It too, is not, when you look at like action movies, you know, it's almost a spoof on an action movie, but they got the tone.
I'm glad to hear you mention this, because, you know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, that movie would have been nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, how funny is that?
Because it's a total audience pleaser, and that's what the whole reason it was designed. You don't have to learn anything, Christopher Nolan, thank you. I don't need a message. I just want to go be entertained.
Yeah.
I want the greatest show on earth. I want the Ten Commandments, you know, whatever. I mean, and I agree with you. It was like one of the most delightful experiences of the year in the theater.
And Wes Anderson has a really good ability on having things be frothy and then allowing himself space when he wants to. He has a great use of tempo as well. But yeah, I mean, Into the Woods probably should be all over this year, and I do think that that's one of the main. I actually think it was cast very well.
I think that
the direction of some of that wonderful, lovely numbers, and it's nominated for a number of awards. You know, not a lot, but a few. I think it's up for costumes, and isn't it up for costumes?
Like production design.
Yeah. Some of those things. I mean, it was glorious to look at and well cast, but.
And to hear Sondheim. You know, you take a while. I said this in my review. You know, it just takes you a while to kind of get past your hearing Sondheim in a movie theater.
Yeah.
For God's
sake. One of my friends who knows it very well, our very good friend Heather Schmucker, she said to me, she goes, just know that you're going to go in there and you're going to know when they pause, because you know the score so well. You'll actually know when they add 6 counts or add, you know, 12 counts. And she was absolutely right, you know, because it's a show that once you've done it, it stays in your DNA.
Did you catch the little nod to A Little Night Music?
I don't know if I did catch
when
it.
The first time, here, I'm sorry, we're going off of this
we
whole
are on
direction.
A tangent.
In this, the first time that they go to the Cinderella's castle, to the ball, they start playing The Sunset Slow. On the underscore, which is from A Little Night Music.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. Now I'll have to see it again.
Every Sondheim in the world, like, I immediately sat up like, oh my God, that's from Little Night Music.
Well, I was taking young kids, so I was really excited to like share it with them, you know, which was kind of fun. Patricia Arquette, is she your pick along
oh,
with...
Oh, she, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What extraordinary performance, and it's just a great Hollywood story. Patricia Arquette, you know, her whole family and her
You also have to love the bravery of an actor and yeah. especially a female actor,
to age on stage,
age on
camera,
film, and put that weight on, and not give a rat's ass, and say, "This is who I am."
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and what I love too is that I feel like she deserved a nomination for an Oscar for True Romance probably 20 years ago. So I feel like it's just desserts that she's getting a nomination now, because that's one of my all-time favorite movies with her and Christian Slater. So.
Well, and she's also really good in the movie.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
She's really, really.
She's my
good.
Favorite thing in the movie, honestly.
Yeah.
The concept of the movie and her and Ethan, but her more than Ethan, I don't know why, just leapt off the screen. She just was such truth. There was just such truth in what she was doing. That, and maybe it's because I'm a woman, I don't know, but I just felt like she was extraordinary. Supporting actor, interesting category. Ethan Hawke is nominated for Boyhood, Robert Duvall for The Judge, Ed Norton for Birdman, Mark Ruffalo for Foxcatcher, and J.K. Simmons, Whiplash. Talk to me about who will win, who should win.
Well, J.K. Simmons has kind of been picking up every single award.
Yeah, it's a flashy Oscar-type role.
And it is a flashy Oscar-type role. I mean, it's basically boot camp. Is, you know, he's the drill sergeant. And
yeah, who was the guy that won, like, for Full Metal Jacket? Or it's reminiscent, right, of, like, that
completely.
Character.
Where he, you know, all right, drop it, give me 20. You know, he screams at this poor kid, this 19-year-old, to teach him how to play the drums and does things that, of course, that you would never be able to do.
But such layers to his performance, though.
You know,
it's just... such layers and nuance.
Basically choose the scenery, and it's certainly, you know, from the Ernest Borgnine School of Acting, and I love that kind of thing. I love it. But what's weird to me, it's not a supporting performance. He's in the movie a lot.
Yeah. He's not in every scene, though, like the kid, who's
also
extraordinary.
No, he's not in every scene, but he's in a lot of scenes. So I think he's going to win. The second one who has been getting some awards is Ethan Hawke for Boyhood.
Yep. Ethan's in a lot of that movie, too, though.
He is also in a lot of that movie. And I certainly wouldn't be upset if he wins. I also loved Edward Norton in Birdman.
Yeah.
Because anybody who can take such a horrible, you know, diva, oh, my gosh, and make him funny. He's so over the top, you know.
He's so great in that.
He's so great in that. Mark Ruffalo, who's always good, is, again, good in Foxcatcher. I'm actually sad, though, that he got the nomination and not Channing Tatum.
Huh. Interesting.
Because I really think Channing Tatum's performance was kind of a step forward in that movie.
Yeah.
Although I don't think you could put him in the supporting category again. That's where it becomes problematic.
Yeah.
I didn't see The Judge with Duvall, so I can't really say much about him. I mean, he's fabulous in everything he does. So
yeah, I mean, I think it's really J.K.'s to lose at this point, but Ethan could be an upset, or Ed Norton, I guess, at this point. The two big categories for actress and actor. Actress, Marion Cotillard for 2 Days, One Night. Felicity Jones, The Theory of Everything. Julianne Moore, Still Alice. Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl. And Reese Witherspoon for Wild. I have not seen Marion Cotillard's 2 Days and One Night, though I adore her as an actress. Her Edith Piaf is one for the ages.
Yeah, she's wonderful. I have not seen... I've seen all the other films, but I haven't seen Gone Girl. So don't tell me what happens.
Okay. I've read it and I've seen it. But I will tell you... she is, to me, now I have not seen Julianne Moore in Still Alice, but I would give Julianne Moore an Oscar every year because I adore Julianne Moore. And I don't know that she's won Best Actress. I think she's won Best Supporting.
She's not won.
She's not won anything? Well,
I don't think she's won anything.
Well, that is crazy because...
That is crazy.
I mean, when I look back on her career... I mean, honestly, I thought she was the best performance in The Hours. Boogie Nights. I mean, she is absolutely indelible in that film.
I'm still mad that she didn't win for Far From Heaven.
Well, Far From Heaven, extraordinary. I own so many of the films that she's even in. But yeah, I don't know if she's won. I don't think she has. I think she's been nominated quite a lot. So they are saying that this is possibly her year based on a lifetime of work. And
well, she deserves it for this. She deserves it for this performance.
Yeah.
She's extraordinary, and she's the most extraordinary thing in the film. The film, it has some issues. It's actually, it's a queer writer-director couple.
Oh, right. I read about this, yes.
Yeah, Richard Glatzer and Wash Westmoreland, who made Quinceañera 10 years ago. And they're delightful. Richard has been struggling himself with ALS.
Yeah.
I believe it's ALS.
Yes, it is. You're right.
And his partner, Wash, is, from what I remember, he's British. And anybody who hasn't seen Quinceañera, which is from 2004, 2005, about a gay couple in L.A. and a lot of characters, it's a really wonderful film.
Mm.
I think they did a remarkable job with this, but but she just shines, Julianne. You really, really believe in it. It's based on a book, and they adapted it and tried for a long time to get it made because it's not exactly, you know, the story of a woman with early onset Alzheimer's doesn't scream box office.
Right.
But
so many people, you know, deal with dementia and Alzheimer's and generally it's with, you know, older people. So to have a young, vital person going through it and an actress that extraordinary to kind of give us an inside viewpoint and vantage point of that, I would think that would be very compelling to a lot of people and very
well,
relatable.
And certainly, right. It's, you know, it's kind of like what I call a cough syrup movie. It's sort of good for you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're having a little bit of a message and some medicine here at the same time.
Yeah.
And to take the journey with somebody who is as good as Julianne Moore, and she does remarkable things with this performance. I mean, you really kind of do see the progression of this disease. It's sort of insidious. I mean, some of the people around her, Alec Baldwin plays her husband. Oh, please, please stop giving him so many jobs. He just annoys me so much. You know how you just have certain people. It's like, oh,
yeah,
my God.
He's one of your people.
He's one of my people. Jennifer Aniston's another one. And, you know, Kate Bosworth plays her daughter, which is like, what? You know, that didn't quite match up. But Hunter Parrish plays her son. That's a little close. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful family. But everything kind of gets out of the way of her performance and these little tiny moments. And that's one thing that I loved about this movie is, and frankly, this has not been a strong year for actresses.
It has not at all.
No. And
although I think it's been a strong year for supporting roles, and that's what I mean. Like, I think Oprah's role in Selma is fantastic. I think Naomi Watts is great in Birdman as well.
Yeah, she was good in Birdman.
I think that, I'm even just trying to think. I mean, I do think there have been some other good roles there. Just we don't have a lot of leading lady roles this year. I actually thought a number of the performances in Gone Girl were exceptional. And I will say, you haven't seen it yet, so you should see it, and I won't spoil anything, but Rosamund Pike really, to me, steals the movie. I mean, she plays amazing Amy, and I think she is amazing in this movie. And part of me thought, I don't know who that is, and I couldn't take my eyes off of her. And I mean, she's stunning. But beyond that, she just, she's fantastic in the movie. I mean, that movie has some really great actresses in it. It has a woman from Chicago who Carrie Coon, who is that her name? Carrie Coon. I'm totally drawing a blank because it's late. But who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf at Steppenwolf? With Amy Morton and Tracy Letts plays Ben Affleck's sister. She's great in it. And then also, I cannot remember the actress right now. It's not Amy Madigan, but kind of like the younger generation's Amy Madigan. Plays the officer. There's a lot of great women, and Neil Patrick Harris is really great in Gone Girl. So there's some great performances in that film. So to say that she, and Ben Affleck is actually really great in that film. So to say that she rises above all of them, it's totally true. And I think in a different year, that actress might be a contender. And I'm really curious to see her in her next film. That's what I can tell you after seeing Gone Girl.
Well, I've liked her in other things that I've seen her in.
See, I don't know her. What has she been in?
She was in this... Oh, gosh. I'm so bad with names now. I'm completely blanking out. It was called Barney's Version. And who was the guy in the wine movie?
Adaptation? Are you talking about Adaptation?
No, the one where they go to the vineyards and they're drinking. This is
not Adaptation. With Sandra Oh and
yes, and Virginia Madsen, and the guy who starred in Barney's Version. I'm so bad with names. It's terrible.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that, but
guy, she was in that movie. She's been in a fair amount of movies.
Okay.
And I've liked her in things. And, a lot of the actress performances that I liked this year were on TV. I loved Frances McDormand and Olive Kitteridge.
Yeah.
The actress.
Well, women in television are dominating. I mean,
are
as we
totally
we
dominating.
Just saw with the SAG Awards, Orange is the New Black getting all the, getting huge awards, a cast that has like 3 men and 30 women,
those actresses in Transparent, come on.
Amazing.
Amy Landecker, Gabby Hoffman, Alex is
Judith
so good
Light.
In that show.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else that I, there's just so many women, those crazy Baby Jane women on American Horror Story, because to me that's kind of, back in the day, Betty Davis and Joan Crawford and Olivia de Havilland, they all made horror movies, and now they make the horror movies on TV.
right. Well, and Vera Farmiga on Bates Motel. I mean, there's so many great actresses right now.
Ryan Murphy is the new Robert Aldridge. I'm so happy to go on record with that.
we got to wrap up, but
Sorry.
Do the best actor category. We've got... Who do we have in that category?
Steve Carell for Foxcatcher, which is all about the nose.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley
and the
Cooper,
breathing.
American
He's
Sniper,
the mouth breathing. That worked well for him, too.
Yeah, about the weight gain. Benedict Cumberbatch for The Imitation Game, which is all about kind of the quirky, weird, genius. Michael Keaton, Birdman, which is about the self-loathing anti-hero. And Eddie Redmayne for The Theory of Everything, which is all about kind of the physical thing that people, the Academy loves to give the award for any actor with a physical challenge.
Yeah.
My left foot.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Rain Man.
They like women to go ugly and do something undone. And they like men to do some sort of physical challenge. Many people have mentioned that it was perhaps interesting that Jake Gyllenhaal was not nominated for Nightcrawler, which I heard was a stunning portrayal, his character in that film, which I have not seen, and I am itching to see.
He's very good in the film. He's very good. And it takes a while to realize that you're actually watching a black comedy, a dark, dark black comedy network. Rene Russo was one of my favorite performances this year in that film. She's so good.
I love Rene Russo.
Yeah,
she has lesbian mothers, so that's cool.
Yeah.
She was raised by lesbians, which is very neat.
That's cool. Her husband wrote and directed that film.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yeah, Dan Gilroy. I don't know. This is a tough category because, Michael Keaton would seem to be kind of with the lead, but again, don't count out Weinstein. Benedict Cumberbatch has a big following.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've seen Eddie Redmayne win a couple of awards.
He has.
And again, he's good in the film, but so much of the film to me was thrown, you know, was weighted towards the actress mm-hmm. who played the wife. And I felt like he was really good, but it's the kind of thing that we have seen. And I don't know. I wanted to get back to the science,
mm-hmm.
you know.
mm-hmm.
I wanted to get back to the theory of everything. I don't know.
I mean, it is too bad that, you know, John Lithgow or Alfred Molina were not nominated in this category. I don't know who you would have taken out, but I guess for me, I'm curious.
I haven't seen Sniper,
but Bradley Cooper and Steve Carell both, I feel like, you know, with the two performances in Love is Strange that you've talked about and other people, and also this film, Mr. Turner, which I've heard has gotten so much attention.
He's very good, but again, that is a real anti-hero, that character. I mm-hmm. mean, he basically seems like this sort of guttural, very gross kind of figure who produces these canvases that are of stunning. They're so beautiful. That film is, I don't even know if that's up for cinematography. Let me look real quick. I mean, it should win. It was one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But apparently Turner was like a very kind of gross sort of, you know, sexy, you know, always, you know, grabbing the help.
Yeah. I just know that movie's gotten a lot of attention, as did, you know, for the Golden Globes. Big Eyes got a lot of attention and is totally not represented here at the Oscars either, which I was a little surprised by the attention it got with the Golden Globes, especially being a Tim Burton film. I thought that movie, I couldn't believe Tim Burton directed it. It was the least Tim Burton film I've ever seen. I'm not quite sure.
I missed it. I was out of town when that one came out, so I missed that one.
Yeah.
This is a really hard, you know, in some ways this is kind of a tough category to call.
Yeah.
I would take out Bradley Cooper and replace with either Alfred Molina or John Lithgow for Love is Strange.
Once again, this may be Keaton's to lose, and they love comeback stories, but I think Eddie Redmayne may give him a run for his money, or Benedict, but it seems like Eddie Redmayne has a little more momentum right now than Benedict Cumberbatch
I think you're right. I think it's going to be sort of Keaton's to lose, and I won't be unhappy if he takes it. I mean, he has done a lot of interesting work, and it really does mirror his own career. Hollywood loves to pat themselves on the back. Come on.
Yeah.
Very insular sort of. What industry does not? I think Steve Carell, it's interesting work and it's sort of a step forward, but you know, it's not the kind of character that, you know, necessarily likes to want to give an Oscar to.
Yeah. I mean, once again, I'm just really shocked that David Oyelowo is not in this category and he should.
I'm sort of stunned. I mean, just hearing you talk about it and hearing other people talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fairly shocked. So I will be excited for you to see Selma. Well, what do you all think? Who do you think is going to win? Right now, it's kind of looking like it may be fairly boring and there may not be huge surprises. So I'm curious if there will be some big surprises coming to us on Oscar night. The Oscars are going to air with Neil Patrick Harris as our MC for the evening and our host on February the 22nd. So set your DVRs and your TiVos. Sunday, February 22nd, Oscar night. Mitchell Fain and I will be on the couch that night doing a post-Oscars podcast immediately following. And you'll be able to see if anything Richard and I said came to pass. Because we feel pretty solid about it, actually. So
yeah,
I've got
I think
a couple
so.
More movies to see. I need to see Imitation Game. I need to see Theory of Everything. And then I can flesh out some of my gaps there with those two films. Richard Knight, happy February. Happy Valentine's. I know we should say that you are now a wedded man.
Just back from my honeymoon. And
just
celebrating
back
my
from your honeymoon.
Year anniversary.
On your what anniversary?
18th year.
Yeah. It's welcome to the beginning of this wonderful new relationship and part of your life.
Thank you.
All the Hallmark wedding cards say. But we want to say congratulations from your QueerCast family on your wedding. And love to you and your husband. And thank you for being a part of our Oscar prediction preview show.
Always love it. Mr. Queer Oscar, that's me.
You are the Uber.
Uber queer of movies.
Uber queer of movies. And I adore you for it. Next week, we're going to be talking with a chief strategist for this marriage fight that we've all been on for the decade and a half or more. Mark Solomon, he is with Freedom to Marry. He has a new book called Winning Marriage. And I'll be starting the first of two parts of an interview with Mark about where we've come in the history of a same-sex marriage and where we are moving toward here in April with the Supreme Court hearing the big case, and our answer will come in June. So Mark Solomon on next week's show. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you. I had a blast as always, sweetie.
And everyone have a great week. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.